Pleasure to introduce our next speaker. Dr. Raju is the Executive Vice President, Corporate Chief Medical Officer of New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation. He oversees the implementation and management of chronic conditions best practices guidelines in 23 facilities.
Thank you very much, Mark. Good morning. Now, I have no financial disclosure to make. The whole idea about my talk is that chronic disease management, the outcome is based on so many hardworking people working very hard and doing lots of other things. It involves a tremendous amount of education, public health education. It involves a lot of education of the providers, incentives of providers to do well, incentives of the patients. But one of the things we used very effectively in New York City in a public health corporation is the QI process, right? Because we found the QA process is a big driver to make changes in the chronic health management. So I just want to share my thoughts with you on this particular subject. So the objective is the same. We are going to how we use the QA process and leverage that size of the corporation to drive changes in the chronic disease management of the corporation, and also how a best practice guidelines get evolved when you use a QA process as a driver. So basically, we are a largest public health corporation, municipal public health corporation in the country. We are 11 acute care. We have 4 long-term care. We have more than 100 community health clinics. We have 6 treatment diagnostic centers, which are like big hospitals by itself. We have a certified home care agency. We have a Medicaid managed care plan. We got about 330,000 enrollees within that. And, of course, we are a major training facility in New York City. We have affiliation with all medical schools, and we are trained a lot of residents and medical students in the system. And we have 39,000 employees and 5,000 of them doctors. And, again, we serve one out of every 6 New Yorkers is our patient, right? We serve 1.3 million patients annually. We have, out of which, about 450,000 is uninsured. Right. We are the ultimate safety net for New York City. We deliver 1/4 of all the deliveries in New York City. We have 5 million outpatient visits. Right. We are responsible for 1/5 of general hospital discharges city. And we disproportionately take a large percentage of behavioral health patients into our system. We have about 40% of our behavioral health beds are in our system. And 1/3 of our detox units, both alcohol detox and drug detox within our system. And we also, 1/3 of all our ED visits in the city are ours, and we run 7 trauma centers in the city. So we have about 1 million long-term care visits, and our population is very diverse as you look at it. They are really, most vulnerable areas of New York City are our patients, and we are very proud to serve them as a part of it. And the diversity is not only language and ethnicity. We have about 150 different languages spoken in the hospital at any particular time. So it's a big system. So we, as a chronic care model, when you looked at it, we basically feel that an ethnically diverse population, most vulnerable, and we all know that the disparities in healthcare affects those populations much more than normal population. So we understood that. And we had some collaboratives to drive through certain changes, especially with the outreach to this vulnerable population over a period of time. And it is really a major challenge because of the cultural issues, the language issues. So we really wanted to apply the state-of-the-art best practice guidelines to the chronic care management. And one of the things we did was patient registry. We'll talk about it a little later on. We use a Wagner's model. Basically, everybody knows about it. It's about 6 fundamental areas in which we concentrate on. It is basically a productive interface and interrelationship and interaction between the patient and the patients get actively involved in their own care at various levels. And we also get the providers to understand that and increase the expertise as well as the resources of providers to take care of the chronic diseases. So quickly, with self-management tool, we give them free blood pressure cuffs. We give them the hemoglobin A1C levels. They have markers. They figure out where they are with that. They carry their own heart failure handbook. They measure themselves. They They put their calories into that, or they put their exercise time into that. So all those things, the weight management is into that. The decision support system, of course, we are in the, all our clinics are completely computerized. So we have a EMR and paperless system. So we are basically put a lot of decision support into that EMR, able to drive down certain chronic disease management guidelines. The delivery system design, we have a telemedicine, right? Some of the most tough patients, they have a telemedicine hooked up to them, and our nurses monitor them continuously and able to use this technology to do that. And we also have a specialized clinic. Anybody who's got a hemoglobin A1C level more than 9, go to a special clinic. We also have a special kitchen, because one of the things we found out in our system is when we give them the ADA guidelines or diabetic diet, it does got no value or any kind of importance to people who eat different food habits. So basically, we brought them into our kitchen and basically able to teach them how to cook their own ethnic food and making sure that the calorie count stay within the same structure what they want to do that. Because lots of times we found out that, you know, we have a large Chinese population, and if you tell them I'm going to use don't use half loaf of bread or something else, they don't really look into that as a possibility. And we have a lot of diabetic educators. The clinical information system, we have a registry which takes care of population-based registry. It is also, you can also bring it down to panel level management. It can also bring it down to the provider level management, and you can also bring it down to patient level management, so that we can actually slice and dice the data the way we want it to figure out where we want to put our resources. Right? In organizational healthcare, of course, we are an integrated system, right? We have a large Medicaid managed care plan, which basically they get treatment in our system. So there's a complete integration between outpatient, inpatient systems, and they are attached with, they kind of interface the same medical record. So it makes it very easy for us to drive those improvements on both sides of the inpatient, outpatient. And of course, we collaborate very, very actively. We have a very good partners in New York City Health Department. They work with us very closely on so many of these things. And also we work with the American Heart Association, community-based community-based clinics, community-based provider organizations. So we work with a lot of people to do that. The common strategies when you want to do this to improve healthcare is public education. We do a lot of public education. We improve access for these people, right, to come in there. We provide more education to the providers. We use the standardized treatment models to drive down improvement. Provide incentives, because we own the Medicaid managed care plan. We give the bonuses to doctors who hit some targets in that. But not the least, which I'm going to talk about, is a QI process. We have extremely robust QI process, and we use the QI process to drive down improvements to the various levels. These are some of the public health measurement we do together with the Department of Health. Right? Access to service, of course, we have everything. We have a cancer screening at no cost or minimal cost to the patients. We have obesity prevention, child vaccinations available, flu vaccines, emergency contraception, and breastfeeding. So many things we do. Access is never an issue, because you always open the access for the people. And our mission is to serve everybody irrespective of their insurance status. So insurance was not a factor in our system. Provider education is another huge step. We get CME credit for every one of those modules the providers take, CE and CME credits, because we are authorized by the New York State Medical Association to give CME credits. So we use that to give out credits to people. And also we use credits for not only for CME education. If a group of doctors sit down and they look at the registry and they look at the various things on the patient, they still get a CME credit, because that is still allowed as a QA process, they get a CME credit. So if a departmental meeting ends and they probably sit down and look at all the diabetic patients and figure out who's doing what, we can still be able to give them CME credit for them. So that it doesn't have to be a structured way of lecturing. So why we chose QI as a leverage? Because we are a large system. Since we are a large system, the advantage is that there is a tremendous amount of competitiveness amongst the people. There are 21 different institutions. Everybody wants to be number one all the time. So that is a very powerful tool. And also, the minute you say QI, it gets a lot of attention from the board, and all the way down. Everybody kind of makes it, I got to perform well in the QA meetings, right? So we found it to be a very effective tool to promote, manage chronic care. The goals of our QA process was, our corporation is, we want to really drive down system-wide changes. So we look at the whole thing as a system, think corporate. That's what our mantra was in the QA, in the system. We standardize the entire QA process, the way the process works, the methodologies, right, of how it's being done, what indicators are standardized across the corporation. And then the measurement is also standardized. So that, those are some of the very crucial principles, because you have to standardize everything. Otherwise, you can't compare one to another, right? And we made it transparent, so that when you, I'm going to talk about it a little later on, when you come in and sit in the QA committee meeting, you exactly know how the other hospital is doing. And in the level of 21 hospitals, where are you? You are 21 or you are number 2. So there is transparency. There is no hiding of the facts. They know exactly where they stand in respect to every indicator, where they stand with that. And we use the corporate-based best guidelines, right? When they're not doing well in a particular topic, we tell them, please go and look at other hospitals, see what they're doing, and try to incorporate those principles into your management. And other way around also, when you're doing very well, we tell them, please go and teach the hospital X, right? They're not doing very well. They're struggling with this measurement. Please go and help them with what you're doing with that. And we always focus on outcomes, because we are focusing a lot on processes. Now we moved on to outcomes. The Corporate Quality Assurance Committee is a board of directors. They meet religiously every Friday for 4 hours. So except some Fridays take off, but they have been there every day. So this process goes on every week. And it's chaired by the New York City Health Commissioner, right? He's one of the honorees at this year's APHA meeting, Dr. Tom Frieden, right? And he chairs it. And he sits down, and he is really doggedly looks at every measurement and makes sure that you do the right things. So you are basically appearing before the Commissioner of Health every Friday and explaining to him why you are not doing well on a particular project, right? And it is attended by the system CEO, Mr. Alan Aviles, who is the president of the corporation. He sits in every one of these meetings. So when the CEO and the medical director and the chief nurse executive, the quality people, and the chairman of the various departments, they come before the meeting, they need to explain to the president of the corporation and the commissioner for health, saying why certain measurements are not up to the par in this particular quarter. Right? They meet quarterly. We chose indicators very strategically. We chose indicators which you want to improve. Right? If you find that this is not doing well, then we add as indicator. So that's why we strategically chose that. And the leadership's accountability is there, because the CEO of the hospital basically says, gives out a plan saying that, I know I'm not doing very well on the colonoscopy access issues, and these are the 4 things I'm going to do to make sure that it improves. Next time I come in another quarter, you will see an improvement, because these are 4 things I'm doing in this particular field, and I'm going to make sure it works well for me. And the methodology is basically we choose a clinic information system to choose the patients and give it to them, so that they are able to look at it at various levels. We have a report card from various agencies that's included in the QA book. The results of PI are aggregated. We don't look at each and every one of them. We look at aggregation of it, see where you are with it, and we aggregate over a period of time. We tell you, at this quarter, I know you did very well, but if you look at the last 3 quarters, still you are number 14 in the rank. Right? So everything is aggregated over a period of time. And it's extremely transparent, so that I will show you in a minute, they exactly know where everybody is. And whenever I find, as a chief medical officer, I find there is certain things everybody is struggling with, a particular measurement, then at that point, I appoint a task force to look into that, and then people come together and get the expertise from within our corporation as well as outside the corporation and try to implement that so that we can improve the measurements over a period of time. Some of the examples, effect on inpatient care. These are some of the measurements in the QA book, right? If you want to measure inpatient care, we closely monitor the asthma and psych patients' readmission rate to look at how the inpatient care was. Outpatient care registries, we have diabetes registry, we have heart failure, hypertensive registry, and all the registries are there. ED care is a readmission of asthma visit to ED. If you get admitted within 7 days, you come back again to the hospital, that is counted against the ED care, how much you did with this. And we also look at use of steroids in the ED with asthma patients, that's another one. So a lot of other things which comes in. Access to care, of course, you monitor very carefully, mammography, colonoscopy, wait times. What is the prenatal entry into the system? How much they enter into that? Do they enter the first trimester, second trimester? We monitor that very carefully. And, of course, we used to provide education to monitor that. These are some of the examples of certain areas where we found very difficult. We couldn't move the organization very well. We have these task force and collaboratives. These are some of the collaboratives we used just to find the best practices and able to standardize it across the corporation. This is what I'm talking about, transparent. If you look at it, there's a various sort of names are there. Bellevue, Metropolitan, Kings County, Queens, all the names are there. And they know exactly where everybody is at every level. And this form is sitting in front of the CEO of the hospital with the medical director. And the same graph is also in front of Dr. Tom Frieden and the president of the corporation and the board of directors. They all look at it at various levels and say where you are with this. So you don't want to be the last guy at 11.11% Coney Island Hospital. So you have a tough time explaining to them why you are the lowest amongst the people. So we make it extremely transparent. And then we also did something 2 years ago. We also want to go transparent to public. So we opened the mortality rate to the public. So we put it in the internet. So this is an example of the book, which is HSC Focus. Basically, you can look at what's the mortality rate in Health and Hospital Corporation every year compared to the benchmarking for national and the regional levels. And then if you go drill down to hospital-specific data, right, there it is, and then if you drill down to that, then you can see every hospital, what is your mortality rate is. Right? Are people who really want, looking for who has the highest one, I can right now tell you that if you look at Elmhurst is 1.83. Right? So their mortality is much, much higher compared to other systems. So there is this is publicly available on the internet where the people can get in and take a look at it. So we want to carry the transparency to a higher level because it makes a lot of people accountable because nobody wants to look at their hospital in a public website to be the last one. Some of the outcomes I want to share with you before I close, right? This is what we have done, pediatric hospital admissions, right? As significantly went down from 4.4% to 3.12%, right? Adult hospitalization went down from 2.48 to 1.36. All of them are in the QA book, so these are the measurements I chose, what we chose to measure. Adult immunization went going up. 175,000 people we immunized last year, and 50% of employees immunized, and this year we want to go to 60% of all the employees get immunized. Quit smoking rate has gone up over a period of time, right, across the board, and the quit rate has also gone up over a period of time. The mammography numbers have gone up. We do about 88,000 mammographies every year, and every year we keep on increasing it, right? Our numbers, last year we did 69,000 screening mammography as compared to 18,000 of the diagnostic mammography. And the rates of mammography has kind of stagnated. 70% of the people who are supposed to get mammography are there getting it now. I'm trying to improve the rate to 90, but I've been having such a difficulty with that because some of the people who get the mammography not in our system. They get it outside. I'm having difficulty in getting them into my medical record. So that is a challenge I got to face. I'm working with that very carefully. So we kind of stagnated on the mammography, irrespective of the fact that it's one of the QA indicators. 70% people think it's okay, but I don't think it's okay. We got to be 90% easily. So because of breast cancer, you can see that the early stage of breast cancer has consistently gone up, and the late stages of diagnosis have consistently gone down. This is another outcome measure, right? The colonoscopy, we do about 20,000 colonoscopies in the system every year, right? Last year, we kind of dropped a little bit because one of the questions we're asking, are we reaching the threshold? Because once you do colonoscopy, the guy is not eligible for 9 more years. So there's a way of taking them out of the system. So we are working with that on that. And the colonoscopy, the polyps have gone up over a period of time. And if you look at a colon cancer, early stages have gone up over a period of time. Last year, we kind of dropped down a little bit from 69 to 65%, right? We need to watch it carefully, see how we do in the year this year, 2008. HIV screening, we want to normalize, routinize HIV screening for everybody. So last year, we got 133,000 HIV testing done on the patients. This year, we are closely around 160,000 in 2008, right? And we have shown 150% increase. It became such a normalization. We want to ask everybody who comes in, just like they want to know whether you're allergic to medication, we want to know, do you want to know your HIV status? This is a registry on diabetes registry. If you look at it, we have about 55,000 patients in the diabetes registry, right, which automatically self-populated all the time. So we are able to track every one of them. And we can do it by population, panel management, by individual physicians, and also look at individual patients so that we know exactly who is doing what at various levels. So you can see how we improve that. So these are seven essential elements of diabetic management. I just want to choose this as an example of what we have done. These are some of the issues we have done over a period of time to drive diabetes care in our corporation. This is exactly the same thing we did with asthma, with the heart failure, right, with the depression, all the stuff. If you look at it, you know, the depression, we chose to test every chronic disease, patient chronic disease for depression. Over a period of time, we have increased our depression screening rate very high. We have done also very well, the LDL compliance has gone up. But if you look at it, we are still struggling with the blood pressure and hemoglobin A1C level. We made some improvements, but not the dramatic improvements I would like to see. This is a unique number of patients. If you look at it, right, I'm just another graph which comes in. What we have made a difference. If you look at it, we have the hemoglobin A1C level good control. We have got 6,000 extra patients came in. If you look at July of 1 year, 10,000 patients in July 07 were under control. And then in October of 08, we have 16,000 patients are under control. So 6,000 patients came under control in 1 year by moving this forward. So this is the overall, in 1 year what you have done, 6,000 more patients, we brought them under control. 6,000 more patients, the blood pressure came under control. From the registry, what we use. And 8,000 patients, LDL got under control in 1 year. And 20,000 more people got tested for depression screening. So because of all these things, what we have done as a corporation, our level of chronic disease management went up, it's got to get better. Our infection rate came down. Again, this is on the public website. This is our ICU, central line infections are considerably going down over a period of time. And there are hospitals in the system which did not have a single central line infection in the last 12 months. Right, because we want zero is a goal, not anything else. Even 2.69 is too much for 1,000 catheter days. And ICU also VAP rate went down over a period of time. And overall, the ultimate outcome is a mortality rate. If you look at it, the mortality over a period of time is start going down. If we start at 1.71, we are 1.52. And this year so far up to end of September, our rate is 1.32. So this year we're going to see a significant drop in the inpatient mortality rate in our corporation. So in conclusion, right, there are multiple ways to get a chronic disease management. You know, you can do patient education, provider education, give them more money, pay the performer, pay for performance, and give them all those things. But we should not underestimate the value of QA process in doing this, because people pay attention to QI, and the accountability comes in. If you make the QI process transparent, people really get into it. The competitive spirit of the provider come into picture, and nobody wants to be the bad provider. Everybody wants to be the best provider. So we basically tap onto that competitiveness of doing the best care, and we're able to show that using that model, we're able to improve the care for our chronic disease management. Okay, and I end here. If any questions, I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. Sure. You, as you rightly pointed out, transparency and accountability made a big, big impact on what we want to do that. Because all the other things we were doing before, we were doing patient education and we are advertising in subways and bus boards and all of the places, go and get checked up, you know, go and do this, go and do that. That was one of the public health management style for many years is just to flood them with so much information and people will come in there. But once we did that, it helped. But it reached a plateau. We can't get any more than that. At the end of the day, I strongly believe, because as a physician, I believe that the patient-physician interaction is, in my opinion, again, it's my personal opinion, is extremely crucial and vital. Patients do what the physician wants them to do. If the physician takes time, or the nurse practitioner, whoever the provider is, you know, I'm talking about the provider set. If the provider takes time to explain to the patient, this is what has to be done, that is probably more powerful than anything else. So that's what happened. The third thing is the transplant accountability, and the third one is the physician taking a very active role, because they don't want to be the last guy on the totem pole. They don't want to be the last guy. So they take time to explain to the patient, you got to do this. Right? This is what the most important thing is. So that was the thing which made a big difference for us. Yes. The question is, do I understand the question correctly? Do you mean to say why I chose outcome measures? Yeah. The process measures are good, right? But the problem, at the end of the day, you know, I just want to know whether the patient got benefit or not. That's what drives me at the end of the day. Especially if I'm going to own a big Medicaid subsidiary, right, of 250,000 enrollees, I just want to make sure that the patient got better care at the end of the day. So that's why we moved on to the outcome. But it is very tough nut to crack, because the providers will always say, look, it is not in my hands. I did everything I wanted to do. The patient goes out and does whatever he wants to do, what it is. But our argument is that you need to really, if you tell the patient, well, there are some patients who will not listen to you. That's fine. But the problem is we don't really, as a providers, explain to the patient various levels and importance. We tell them, don't do this. But we don't give a rationale why you don't want them to do that. So that is more powerful, in my opinion. So that's why we chose outcome measures as opposed to process measures. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, 330,000 lives, yeah. Yeah, all capitated. Yes. It's quality, because you're a public hospital system, right? And it does make a difference. But it's purely based on quality, because the managed care is 330,000 patients, but we serve 1.3 million patients. So that is only about 25% of our patients come from managed care, our managed care. 70% of patients who come to the system are not from managed care. So the advantage of moving our managed care into that, because there's a better integration. Because the physicians, when for example, we bring them a heart failure patient, come into the hospital. We treat him, whatever we need to do with him. Then he goes out in the community. And if he doesn't go to the doctor in my system, then I don't have any control over that. So at the end of the day, it becomes much more, the fragmented care at the end of the day makes a big difference. That's why it is much more easier for me to do that. Yeah, Rich. Yeah, outpatient is completely paperless. Inpatient, I would say about 40% paperless.
And so do you get that data real time?
Real time, yes, absolutely.
And the other question I had, this is my concern. You showed those outcomes on mortality rates, mm-hmm. With the different acute facilities. But don't you think there's some data there in that, where those acute facilities are not the same?
Absolutely. Excellent question. Absolutely, that's a extremely good question. In fact, I have scars to prove it when I first did that, because when we wanted to adjust mortality adjustment, there are so many different adjustments methodologies there, right? So if you adjust it to comorbid conditions, that's fine. But you also have to adjust it to socioeconomic conditions on the literacy level, right? Because So the same comorbid condition, the person who just pulls out in front of a limousine from Park Avenue is very different from somebody who just takes a subway and comes in there. So that's the problem. What happens is, I'm not really comparing it to them. I'm comparing it to themselves. In 2004, if your mortality is 1.7%, the type of patient hasn't changed very much in a corporation over a period of time. So the question is going to be, if you are going to show a comparatively decrease in your own mortality statistics compared to 2004, 5, 6, and 7, and 8, then I can say that you are doing a better job on that. You are right. The comparing it to, for example, I can't compare Kings County to Coney Island Hospital, because one is a big level trauma center, has got so many other things involved, has got so many tertiary care involved in this. But if you, and also if you look at Coney Island, which is the lowest, has got the average age of the Coney Island population is 88 years old, because they are surrounded by nursing homes. Most of the patients in Coney Island come from nursing homes. So these are some of the tough challenges. We need to do that. And the physicians and the providers usually push back on this thing when you want to go transparent with it, right? But then we need to say, look, at the end of the day, it is you are measured against yourself. You just keep showing me a reduction of mortality over a period of time. Then I will buy it. I will not compare it to another hospital, but I compare it to yourself.
But your slide did show Coney Island.
Yeah, but you didn't see the asterisk underneath that. There's an asterisk underneath that which says that they are substantially very higher number of patients. You are absolutely right. This has created so much of thing in there. But at the end of the day, whatever adjustments I make, risk stratified adjustments, somebody is going to say, forget it. That's not the way it is, because that you did not take into consideration this particular thing. That particular comorbid is not taken into consideration. So at the end of the day, there is no real risk management to that. Anyway, thank you very much.